So you remember last September, you had the Republicans running around, you know, saying, we need tax reform, we need our great big tax heist. In fact, House Speaker Paul Ryan was at the Harley-Davidson plant there in Wisconsin, touting how the wonders of giving the already wildly wealthy more. He said, quote, tax reform can put American manufacturers and American companies like Harley-Davidson on a much better footing to compete in the global economy. And then he finished it up with, and keep jobs in America. Had he just stopped after compete in the global economy and really helped them putting on a much better footing, that would have been accurate. We were giving them a ton of money, which certainly would have made them, well, wealthier. But he had to follow it up with keep jobs in America. And then in January, after the tax heist was already accomplished, we find out that Harley-Davidson is going to close a plant in Kansas City. Then a few days later, you find out that, oh, that huge tax windfall, Harley-Davidson is going to buy some 15 million shares back at about $700 million. So we know what they did with their money, didn't bother sharing much of it. And now we find out Harley's opening up a plant in Bangkok. Coincidence? Me doth think not. I'm here to talk about some of our horrible trade deals, where we are with NAFTA, China, all of it. Our global trade policy specialist from the AFL-CIO, our good friend Celeste Drake. Celeste, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Rick.
So, coincidence? Is it coincidental that we gave them a boatload of cash and they bought back a bunch of shares of their stocks and they're leaving the country with our money?
I wish I could say it was coincidence. But it was entirely predictable, and this is what corporations are doing, largely because they can.
And I argue that we being stupid and having, again, you know, we talked about this all in the run-up to that 50-some-day ram-down that they did, that this was going to happen because we'd seen it before. We've seen this bad movie before, and guess what? The sequel did not surprise.
The sequel did not surprise, and, you know, I guess it's the question of, I don't think we're stupid. I think, you know, the working people of America knew what was coming. I think it's just a feeling of, at this point, inevitability, who is going to stand up for us? And clearly, on this tax issue, it's not the guy who campaigned for months and months and months about standing up for American workers, bringing jobs back to America, all of that, which is all completely incongruous and will have the opposite effect of this massive tax giveaway. So I think workers are looking around like, who do we have to rely on? And the answer, as usual, is we've got to rely on ourselves.
Exactly.
And we've got to push these folks in the right direction because nobody is going to stand up for us unless we make them do it.
Absolutely. So what'd you do with your $1.50?
I think I used it as a down payment on a Starbucks coffee.
It's a good choice. As long as you're not black, it's a good choice.
Yeah.
That's a cheap shot, but well-deserved in Philadelphia anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
But you know, the thing is we were promised $4,000. I'm still waiting for my Trump prize.
Well, we're all going to be waiting for a long time. And you know, $1.50 a paycheck or, you know, however much, that's not, you know, when you think about it, we have to get over the lies about putting more money somehow into the hands of CEOs and America's elites is somehow going to magically create jobs. That's not how jobs happen. CEOs don't create jobs because somebody gave them a tax break. They create jobs when there's demand and when they need to hire people.
Yep.
So we need to get the economy moving, and you don't do it by giving tax incentives that actually promote more production offshore. And that's exactly what this tax bill did. It actually undermines any of the positive things that this administration might be doing on trade by essentially saying to companies, hey, if you produce offshore and make your profits off there, don't worry about this game playing that we've been doing about you don't have to pay taxes till you bring it back to the United States. Now the rule is you don't have to pay taxes at all.
There you go.
So feel free. Just move all the rest of your production. And it's really contradictory toward all these stories about, you know, how American jobs are important and American workers are important. So if they're not important to the folks in Congress who voted for this bill, and if they're not important to the folks in the administration who were advocating for this bill, then we need to, you know, again, show our solidarity and our unity by saying we are not going to listen to any more of these lies. We're going to go out and recruit folks, you know, from whatever political party they might be, and say, if you're going to stand up for working people, for good jobs, for decent wages, for fair trade, for anti-discrimination, for equality for all, then we're going to be with you.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, what really bothers me, and I hate being right, but when all of this tax talk was going on, and I argue it was rammed down our throats. Understand, it was a very short period of time, massive legislation. I know my Republican friends and Tea Party friends love to say the Affordable Care Act was rammed down their throats. That was like 11 months. This was like 50-some days. From start to finish, it was over. And we were saying all then, what's going to happen is these companies are going to move and we're going to pay their moving expenses. And I look at Harley and it's what we did. It's like wearing a kick me sign that you paid for the paper, the pen, and the tape to put it on your own back.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And now, you know, what's next? I mean, when things move this fast, I mean, a lot of Americans don't really tune in to politics a lot just because it's a lot of wonk speak. It's a lot of people who rely on economists as experts because they want average Americans to feel that they just don't have enough information to understand. And that's all absolutely not true. The economy really is as simple as we all think it is, and we don't need to defer to these folks who say, well, economists say if we just give the rich people tax cuts, everything will be brilliant. You know, we need to say, what about those jobs that were promised to be saved at Carrier?
Yep.
And what about when Donald Trump was promising that if Ford built another plant in Mexico, he was going to give them what for? I mean, there's tough talk and then there's real action. And we've seen some tough talk around China, you know, that gives workers hope that, wait, we're going to do something about predatory trade and unfair trade and exploitive trade. And then, you know, you wait a little bit and you hear, oh, well, those plans are on hold while we continue to talk to China. And pretty soon it starts looking like the same old thing, where those that working people elect on promises to do something about jobs and wages are breaking those promises left, right, and center.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But on the tax thing, I mean, we love reading half the sentence. And I know my Second Amendment friends are very, very fond of only half a sentences. You know, when we hear the half a sentence, we're going to give all the money to rich people and it's going to be great. We forget to get the rest of it, which is for them, you know, not for us. Because rich people know what to do with money. They make more money for themselves. So let me move into the trade negotiations, because that's where you're the genius in all this. You're the person who's got the pulse on things. Let's start with NAFTA. Are we getting a deal this year? Is it going to happen, or 2019, or status quo nothing?
It's looking less and less likely that we're going to get a new deal this year. I can't say anything for sure because the negotiators are still talking, but it's looking like windows are closing for, you know, preferred vote periods. And, you know, last week and the week before, Speaker of the House Paul Ryan was running around talking about May 17th as a deadline. If the deal's not done by May 17th, Congress can't go vote. Well, that was a fake deadline. You know, you hear the president talk about fake news. May 17th was fake news. There was nothing real about it in terms of getting that done and being able to vote on it this year. It was really just a way to short circuit negotiations, to cut through some of these tough issues so that we couldn't get a deal that was actually significantly better for working people, that might actually have a chance of creating good jobs in the U.S. and raising wages for workers across all of North America. Trying to cut it off was really a way of trying to keep the corporate cronies happy and keeping those investor rights in the deal and keeping the bad environmental rules in the deal and making sure that Big Pharma gets what it wants. And so it's actually kind of a good thing that that deadline got blown through, because it means at least the three countries are still in the rooms. They're still talking to each other. Now, we don't know where they're going, and we don't know where they're going to end up, but the fact that they're still talking is really a better sign for working people and a positive outcome, maybe, than a definitely bad outcome, which is what would have happened had they rushed to the finish line.
No, I'm with you on that, but my fear is Mr. Art of the deal, or in this case, the, you know, the collapsing deal, gets us something worse. And I look at, you know, this recent Supreme Court decision. I fear that anything this administration does is definitely not going to help workers. And I fear that the pendulum swings even further toward the moneyed interests and the huge multinational corporations.
It's certainly a possibility, right? There's a huge risk here, and we knew going in that with this president, with this Congress, that, you know, reopening NAFTA was a big risk. But you know what else is a risk? The current job-killing, wage-reducing, you know, pro-corporate, totally rigged, totally biased NAFTA. So it's sometimes you've got to – there's a moment of opportunity – big risk, you know, potential reward. But again, you're exactly right. I mean, it's not that this president is the guy who's the champion of workers. You know, he's said things like the minimum wage is too high, and, you know, he's been known for not paying people for the work they've done for him. He's, you know, outright said things that are racist, xenophobic, misogynist, all of these things, right? So it's not about trusting this guy to write the deal, but it's how can we as working people get in, you know, he's opened a crack to say, let's review this bad trade policy. Can we sort of get the camel's nose under the tent and blow it open and really change the conversation? It's not going to happen automatically, but if we can get in the room, we can say one more time, look, we are not taking this corporate-directed trade anymore. It's time to stop letting the corporations write the rules. And we do have an ally of sorts in the United States trade representative. You know, for whatever else the president is, he's appointed a knowledgeable, intelligent guy as his chief trade negotiator, and a guy who for years was talking about why U.S. trade policy wasn't working, and talking about things like social dumping, and talking about things like the trade deficit and reviving our manufacturing base. So, you know, it's sort of like, you know, like any time that we're negotiating in our unions a contract with the employer, they seem to have the cards stacked up on their side. But what can we do to show unity, to show power, to show good negotiating skills, and really bring that pressure to bear? And that's what we're trying to do with NAFTA. There's certainly, like, no guarantee of a good outcome, but there's a possibility, so we're trying to push through it.
Let me ask you last kind of line of questioning, because, you know, I've had people ask me a very simple question, and I don't have a simple answer outside of that, yeah, China's probably worse. Which is worse, our NAFTA trade deal or how bad we're getting screwed by China?
Well, certainly in terms of the size of the impact, it's China. And it's China all over the place, because China's economy is, by some measures, slightly smaller than ours, by some measures, slightly larger than ours. So when China is engaging in all of these sort of predatory behaviors, whether it's labor and human rights abuses for its own workforce, whether it's you know, engaging in outright intellectual property theft, producing counterfeit goods, whether it's forcing companies into joint ventures as a way to force investment in China, as if, you know, the companies don't want to operate there anyway. All of those things add up and add up and add up. And I think the last number that I saw was we had lost something like 3.2 million jobs to China just in the years like 2000 to 2015. And that's in comparison to 850,000 lost to Mexico going all the way back to 1994. So it's China. It's the big gorilla in the room, and fixing, even if we could fix NAFTA, that's not going to fix all of our trade woes. And quite frankly, you know, we need to stop talking about trade in a vacuum. You know, as we started off talking about taxes and how, you know, this tax bill could swamp any positive effect from a renegotiated NAFTA. We've got to get all of our domestic policies in line. We need the right to form unions and bargain in a way much better than those rights are protected now.
Yeah.
We need investment in infrastructure and job training. We need investment in schools. We need a real, you know, safety net and retirement system so that workers are actually secure. And then you combine that with good tax policy that's fair, good trade policy that's fair, and then we're really talking about a much better life for working people. And, you know, right now we're sort of nowhere near that on any of those fronts.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's one of those things I'm hoping front and center 2018, Democrats pick up that mantra and move forward. But for me, you know, taking on China at this moment is important, because it's only going to get worse the farther down the road we go. And you know, I don't know how, I don't know where the tipping point is to where there's no going back, but I fear we're close to that.
Well, I think that that's true, but we also have to give folks a sense of the of hope that things can turn around. And I look at it this way, you know, there's been a lot of surprise elections in the United States with Trump, in the United Kingdom with Brexit, you know, in Italy, the Five Star Movement, which is, you know, sort of a crypto-fascist movement, got a lot of votes. And rather than sort of bemoaning, oh, my gosh, people are becoming, you know, horribly, you know, moving to the right and, you know, fascist and racist and all of those things, we can say what it means is people are frightened. People are stressed. So it's a moment of opportunity. And if the progressives can get together, the labor unions and our allies that we have traditionally worked with in the faith, environmental, you know, all of these communities, and say, how do we make the case so that it's not just the fascists and the racists making the case? How do we make the case and make this a moment of opportunity? There's a chance to turn it around. You know, if you rely just on, well, the Democratic Party's going to save us, or I'm going to vote for the strong man who's going to save us, we'll be left disappointing. We've got to get out there and do the work ourselves and say, let's take this moment where people are sort of searching for answers and provide a real narrative. And that narrative has got to be around, when we elect people to government, they need to stand up for us, not campaign contributors, not giant corporations who say they know better, not economists who use a lot of gobbledygook words to try to confuse people, but basic, smart, thoughtful, everyday people that are, you know, America's workers, the backbone of our economy. We can do this, and we've done it before, and I think all we have to do is look back to the New Deal to say that was a time, it wasn't perfect, it didn't include everybody, we've grown as a country. Let's get out there and get a new, inclusive New Deal, and that can work, but we've got to get that message going. And so we've got to start talking to, as you mentioned, talk to the our Tea Party friends, talk to our, you know, so-called patriot friends, and say, wait a minute, we do have some things in common. If we can stop yelling at each other, you know, maybe we can open this door for something better.
There you go. Amen, sister. Testify. Testify.
Thank you.
I'm right there with you. Celeste, it's always great talking with you. Please come back again real soon.
I would love to. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Our good friend Celeste Drake. She's the trade and globalization specialist there at the AFL-CIO. Excellent stuff. I love having her on. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. And the bills are creeping through the door. It's desperate times, so desperate measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out. Where's our government? Lawsuits and arraignments. Members under company surveillance. Public divided. Either they love us or they hate us. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have took into account that we never give up. We'll be here one day longer.
working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.